ready, then I would like to call House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:23 p.m. The date is Friday, January 27, 2006. We have a quorum with Representative Crawford, Representative Rokeberg, Guttenberg, and myself, Chairman Anderson, here. And the other three members are, I'm told, on their way. Today's schedule, we have House Bill 338, the certification of fitness for explosive handlers, Representative Chenault's bill. I'm intending to hold the bill until next week for final, I suppose, disposition, because we have some, I think, some problems, and members of labor organizations have called me today and asked that it be held, and they want to work with Commissioner O'Clery. In response to that, Commissioner O'Clery has asked that he be able to speak and address some of the concerns that he believes will be brought up next week. And so we will have him come up, Commissioner. And then also next is House Bill 295, the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act. That's the bill that we tried to get to last week that folks waited 2 hours and couldn't testify. So if committee members could stay to hear their testimony, and hopefully we can move that bill and represent the So, Commissioner, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Greg O'Clery, the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I'll be very brief, Mr. Chairman. We're certainly willing to work with those that have concerns about the particular bill. You know, sometimes Providence sends these little messages to us, and if we heed them, we usually end up on the right course. I want to just enter into the record some information that came to us within the last few hours, actually days, and I'll if you can bear with me, I'll read it very
please.
Short.
Oh, no, take your time.
We're not Kodiak incident summary. Now, as you know, when we are investigating incidents that occur, we cannot go into great detail at this point because we haven't finished our investigation. It's kind of like the way the NS or the Airplane Safety Agency says, this is all preliminary information, so that's what this is. On January 9th, 2006, at 4:15 p.m., an explosives handler detonated a blast that sent rock and debris into playground and buildings at the North Star Elementary School in Kodiak. The blast sent boulders up to 5 pounds in weight, some 300 to 400 feet, and damaged the roof of the school. In fact, I understand it holed the roof of the school. Good thing you don't have rain there right now. Probably wouldn't have flooded the school. But seriously, the event is currently under investigation, so I'm unable to provide too many details. Rocks and blast debris landed over the entire playground area where children were playing just 30 minutes before the blast. There was a teacher and a student in the reading room within 200 feet of the blast who indicated that she experienced a sonic blast that shook the school structure and looked outside and saw and heard large rocks and blast debris falling vertically on the roof of the school and throughout the playground area. Now, the reason I point this out to you is that certainly we can't monitor every circumstance where explosive handlers are applying their trade. But I would speculate, again, and only speculate, that it appears that either we were the proper safety precautions were not taken to eliminate this potential problem. And, you know, we fingerprint school bus drivers who take our precious human cargo to and from school. Thank God we actually fingerprint attorneys, insurance agents, the whole list goes on. But we have no authority in statute to do background checks on individuals who actually enter this trade. It is not our desire to restrict someone from seeking their gainful employment. But we have a public safety concern about this particular certification, and I would ask your indulgence in working on this bill and get it moving through the process. And as I said, I'll reiterate, the department is certainly willing to work cooperatively with those that have difficulties with the bill itself. I think the department would certainly support a good, strong, ongoing education program for these folks that are certified, and work very closely with those individuals who represent or have relationships with folks that are certified to handle explosives in our state.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. I'll speak for the committee to say that I think we all agree that the concerns that we don't want unsafe explosive devices handled or mishandled, and I think this bill is important to address that. But I'll segue to if there's anyone from labor in the audience that wants to make any comment now, or if it's agreed that you will be working with the commissioner and we can address this hopefully next week. Is that accurate? No need to testify? Okay, well then we'll hold the bill and they'll be in touch with you, and then rather than have a big long debate, we'll try to work that out next week. And
I prefer short debates.
Okay,
thank you very
agreed.
Much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any comments from the committee? Hopefully none. Good. So that bill is held. We'll go to the last bill on today's agenda, House Bill 295, Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act. Heath is here. He brought it up last week, and again, the members that were waiting online had to leave, and I regret that they were online so long and weren't able to testify. Any just reminder points for the committee so they know where we're at?
Mr. Chair, we didn't get a chance to discuss it at all, so it's all fresh, essentially, to my understanding.
Great. And then who's going to testify today?
I believe that online should be Lynn Levengood, as a member of the Uniform Law Commissioners, and Michelle Boutine, who's a private practice attorney in Anchorage.
Okay. Well, then why don't we go ahead, and Heath can stay there, because no one's in the audience to testify. If we could go to Lynn first and then Michelle, and if you could state your name and affiliation for the record, and then if please comment on the legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Lynn Levengood. I'm an attorney. I live in Fairbanks, Alaska. And I am a member of the Alaska delegation to the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws. This body is a expert body that helps create the uniform and laws that are enacted throughout the country, probably the most notable that nearly all the states, I think maybe all the states have adopted, is the Uniform Commercial Code and other legislation, Uniform Child Jurisdiction Custody Act. There's a lot of uniform acts that the states have adopted to try to make things uniform across our great country. This piece of legislation, which is titled House Bill 295, the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act, is a piece of legislation that was originally drafted by the National Conference on Uniform State Laws, obviously in a subcommittee of experts in in the Uniform Code regarding transfers, title issues, land title issues. I personally am not an expert in this field. However, I wanted to testify today that if there are any questions of the committee or the sponsor or people that contact the sponsor, that I can get in contact with the original drafters of the specific language. Obviously, there may have been some changes specifically to Alaska that obviously the sponsor can probably answer. But if there's any technical questions that relate to the national components of this legislation, that I could certainly assist anyone in getting that information. Otherwise, unless there's any questions, I just wanted to introduce myself, offer my assistance to contacting the National Conference on Uniform State Laws to find out any questions that anyone might have. And with that, I'll just ask for any, if there's any questions.
Thank you, Lynn. Are there any questions for Lynn, Representative Guttenberg?
Thanks, Lynn. This is David Guttenberg. Lynn, I hope you're staying warm.
It's 50. Well, it depends what thermometer you pass, but some, most of them are reading between 44 and 50 right now.
That was my question.
Below.
Thank you.
Okay, well, next go to Michelle Boutine, and Michelle's the one that contacted me and talked about the need for this legislation. Michelle, if you could state your name and affiliation for the record, and then kind of go through the background and impetus upon which you thought this legislation would help Alaska.
I would be happy to. Thanks. My name is Michelle Boutine. I am a practicing attorney in Anchorage. I've been practicing in Alaska since 1986. I'm a UAF graduate. I practice primarily in the area of commercial law and bankruptcy, so I have had occasion to work firsthand on fraudulent conveyance matters and issues and actions. I fully support Alaska adopting the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act. I checked last week, and I believe 42 states have adopted a version of the UFTA, and for the most part, I believe an unchanged version of the model UFTA. Our current Alaska statute on fraudulent conveyance is all of the media section in the Alaska statutes of the fraudulent conveyance section right now is all of one sentence long. We need some bright line guidance, and of course you have a copy of the proposed act before you, and it is far more detailed and provides some bright line guidance as to what is a fraudulent conveyance and bringing fraudulent conveyance actions. Right now it's like driving down a road without a road map and without even a road, and you don't even know what the road is until you get to court and the judge tells you what the road is, which was my occasion. What happened a couple years ago, I was representing a bankruptcy trustee, and the debtor in bankruptcy was a corporation. The corporation was owned by one individual, 100% owned corporation. The individual shareholder of the corporation basically saw what was coming down the road. It had all hit the fan, and she took the remaining assets of the corporation and transferred the assets to herself, and then put the corporation in bankruptcy and declared all of about 50, I think there was a sum total of like $50 in assets declared on her bankruptcy schedules when she filed for bankruptcy. So I took a look at what public records, found what had happened, and brought the fraudulent conveyance action against her, seeking to recover the property that had been fraudulently conveyed, seeking to recover it back into the bankruptcy estate so it could be liquidated by the bankruptcy trustee for the benefit of the creditors of the bankruptcy estate. She had legitimate creditors, judgment creditors out there. And we ended up going to trial, and the bankruptcy judge found, under following some existing Alaska case law, some authority, that it was okay for the shareholder, even though the debtor was insolvent, to prefer herself and transfer the assets to herself because she claimed to have made some loans to the corporation. So she, too, was a creditor of the corporation. So it was okay for her to orchestrate this so that she received all the assets and the other creditors did not. The judge came out with a written decision that is a public record, that, and he finds in his written decision that had Alaska, if we had the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act in place now, he would have to find that what she had done was in fact a fraudulent conveyance. He sort of was begging us to see that Alaska does something and passes the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act. And in fact, I've had conversations with him following that matter, and I believe that he does support Alaska passing the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act. So that's one example that I think that the outcome of the case would have been far more equitable if Alaska had adopted the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act, and I sort of made it a mission of mine to support the passage of the act after that case. I think the passage of the act would wholly fit in with the current climate. I don't know if you're aware that there has been sweeping substantial changes to the bankruptcy code that was implemented last fall, and creditor organizations had pushed for those changes for a number of years, and those changes finally were implemented. Those changes, the policy reason behind those changes, promote individual financial responsibility. And I think there's a climate in this country that enough is enough as far as creditors or debtors escaping their debts to creditors. The climate is more toward making individuals responsible for their debts, and critics may say that the UFTA would make, in more instances, the court find that it has been a fraudulent conveyance than what Alaska has right now. And I say then, fine, that's good. I'm for that. And I guess I'll turn it over, see if anybody has any questions. Like my predecessor, I don't purport to be in any manner an expert on the UFTA, and I'm familiar with one section in particular, but I'm not an expert, but I'd be glad to answer any questions if I can.
Thanks, Michelle. And this is Chairman Anderson. Just so you know, the bill will then continue after it goes through our committee to Judiciary, and I'm vice chair of that committee. We'll assess the kind of the legal parameters of it. Again, I always tell the committee they're able to answer or ask any questions they want, judicial or labor and commerce related. But that's where we're targeting, and I think you illustrated a great example of how, in terms of commerce and the ability of someone to escape a debt. This bill would remedy that based on that instance. Is there any question that a committee member has for Michelle, either related to her practice and stories that she's been witness to or been counsel to, where there's been a problem that but for not having this legislation, it wouldn't have happened? Or is there a question relating to the bill itself? Because she will be able to answer any technical questions faster than I can. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Boten, thank you for your statement. And in reading your letter to the chairman, and I won't go into them, but I've got a lot of questions that deal with that, and as far as what the business practices are and expanding into that, what actually happened, and maybe if conditions were different then it would have been a fraudulent activity, but if it isn't, maybe it there's a reason for that. But my question is, in a sponsor statement, in the third paragraph down, it says the UFTA creates a right of action for any creditor against any debtor and any other person who receives property from the debtor in a fraudulent manner. Well, that's, I mean, we're going to create kind of a new definition for that, I think, in this bill. But I'm just wondering if you're aware of any place in statute where there's a similar action for any debtor against a creditor. So are we just creating a one-way street for creditors?
This is a remedy that creditors would use, and I'm not aware myself that there is a cause of action arising out of the UFTA that a debtor can bring against a creditor.
Okay, so I guess my question would be...
Did I understand the question right?
Yeah, you've got it right. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Guttenberg's, I guess, pondering why isn't there an ability for a debtor to go against a creditor, but your point is this is... It is kind of a one-way street. The UFTA what was the original purpose for it?
It, I have a copy of it in front of me. Let me get to, bear with me for a second.
I mean, in a nutshell, though, Michelle, wasn't it to assist creditors because debtors default and they don't pay anything?
Right. It is concerning transfers fraudulent as to present and future creditors. So it specifically is, just like our statute now, is also a remedy for creditors to recover assets, bring back into the debtor's possession assets that the debtor has fraudulently transferred away. But going back to your question, if there is some, you know, if there was some more specific, like an example, you might want to set out, you know, with any different set of facts, there very well may be some other remedy out there if the debtor's been injured or harmed in any way by somebody taking their assets, then there might be something else out there that they can look to for a remedy.
And this is Chairman Anderson, but of the 42 states and of the uniform model, the intent was not to do that. And so there are probably other mechanisms, but to answer Representative Guttenberg, this isn't the one in this state or any other state. Correct?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, this is specifically set for a remedy, a vehicle for creditors to seek to avoid fraudulent transfers that debtors have made.
Okay.
Which kind of begs the question that one thing that the Fraudulent Transfer Act does is also make it a fraudulent transfer as to present and future creditors. So might not be even be a creditor now, and there's a fraudulent there's a transfer, but you're a creditor down the road. There's a look back.
Okay. Representative Guttenberg, do you have any other questions?
Not right now, thank you.
Okay. Representative Roekberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Boutin, can you, have you reviewed the this draft of House Bill 295 and the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act as contained in that? In the context of Alaska statute and your practices here, are you comfortable with the way the bill is drafted from your experience?
I am and fully support the bill. I believe that the bill is taken directly from what has been proposed by the Committee for Uniform Laws. There was a question that came up regarding whether there was a section that had been inadvertently left out. the statute of limitations section, maybe? And I don't know if that's been remedied with the current version, what you have before you right now. Maybe Tom might know the answer to that.
And I don't. And I don't know if he does.
Through the chair, Representative Roachberg, I had received briefly and had a chance to insert into your packet. I have a blank committee substitute, which I wanted to present to you guys, that did include that section. It's a statute of limitations that was originally left out of the original version, but which has been added.
Okay, with that, I do 100% fully support the version that you have now.
Okay, very good, Dan. Mr. Chairman, I was looking at the statute. It appears that this the current law that we have now was adopted in Alaska statutes in 1949.
Okay, so it's fairly new, correct, Michelle?
I would call it very archaic.
And if I could, Mr. Chairman, to follow up to the witness.
Representative Roper.
I know, looking at the, I think I've seen this bill on this committee at least several times in the past. Unfortunately, it hasn't made it through for some reason, but at any rate, you brought up the fact, ma'am, that there has been the bankruptcy reform of 2002, and yet there was the Bankruptcy Reform Act of 1978 that this doesn't even conform with. So that certainly makes that step. But is this version of the act, does this conform with the new Bankruptcy Act, or is there going to be any subsequent revisions from the Uniform Law Commissioners about this?
It is not the same at all. But it doesn't have to be. Basically, once the party's in bankruptcy, then the bankruptcy federal laws control what happens in the bankruptcy case. There is a bankruptcy fraudulent conveyance section, and it was changed when the new code changes went into effect just this past October. In fitting with the political climate right now of making people more responsible, they expanded under the federal law the fraudulent transfer remedies that the bankruptcy trustee or creditor would have once a entity does file for bankruptcy. But the laws are not the same. The bankruptcy fraudulent conveyance look back period is only 2 years, and it is not the UFTA. It doesn't track the UFTA. But that's okay. There's a separate remedy that the bankruptcy trustee has. Once a party files for bankruptcy, the trustee can bring a fraudulent conveyance action either under the bankruptcy code, and it's my opinion that the bankruptcy code, if I'm representing the trustee seeking to bring the action, that's my first choice because it's easier for me to prove. It's automatic. If this, and this happen, it's a fraudulent conveyance. I bring that asset back into the bankruptcy estate. Or in the alternative, the trustee can bring all and any actions that are available to him under state law. So the trustee has both. And if Alaska passes the UFTA, the trustee can either use the bankruptcy federal fraudulent conveyance statute, or he can use the Alaska UFTA statute.
Michelle, let me interject. This is Chairman Anderson. I'm going to move that we adopt for discussion purposes version G of House Bill 295. Seeing no objection, that version G is before us. It's better to have it before us if we're going to assess.
Mr. Chairman, could you have Mr. Hilliard point out the change?
Yeah.
I can, through the chair, Representative Roachberg, to the members of the committee, the inserted section that could be found on page 7, beginning at line 27, extinguishment of cause of action. That was an accidentally omitted section from the original version of 295 that has been inserted into this G version.
And, Mr. Hilliard, that's the only change?
That is the only change.
Okay.
And going back to the witness, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Roachberg for Ms. Boutin.
Yeah, from your testimony, Ms. Boutin, I take it that I think I understand your ability to select or elect to use either the federal law or the Alaska statute, whatever suits the purpose of your fact pattern, but
if there's a bankruptcy. If there's not a bankruptcy, then creditors seeking a remedy just have the state statute available to them.
Well, it sounds as if the case you indicated to the committee was done under the 78 Bankruptcy Act, and then the judge deferred to state statute.
Mm-hmm.
Would that happen under the new 05, 2005 Reform Act?
Yes.
It would still would. So it's necessary to have Alaska law to assist you to accomplish your objective. Is that correct?
Yes.
So that's why we want to pass this, even though, but you I guess I want to make absolutely certain that this is the right version. Would there be another version, but that hasn't been published or anything, that would be updating to the 05 bankruptcy law?
I'm not aware that the Model Act
perhaps a
change from 04 to 05.
No, I mean...
Commissioner Levengood, are you still online?
I am.
This is Chairman Anderson. Do you have an answer for Representative Roepberg, possibly?
I am unaware of any recent change or that the new bankruptcy code is very new, and I will have to... I will call Chicago on... actually, I'll have to wait till Monday, and I'll get back to the Representative Anderson with that answer.
That's fine. I don't have a real problem. I just thought it'd be of interest to have on the record here.
Okay.
Because there was that major change in 05.
So sure.
I think we're making significant progress, though, for moving from 1949 into the 21st century.
I think Representative Roepberg supports the general concept. Right. We can supplement with it. When I receive that correspondence, Commissioner Levengood, I'll distribute that to all the committee members as the bill goes through the process. Representative Guttenberg.
I do have some questions, but I'm trying to read through this and formulate them in a better fashion or just better understand it. So I will pass right now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other committee questions? I know this can get fairly technical, so at first blush it's probably not easy to find problems until you really sink your teeth into it. Very exciting reading.
In addition to Mr. Chairman, in addition to the information that Mr. Levengood intends to provide us, I can tell you that in my research, looking through both the Uniform Law Commissioner's information provided and the National Conference of State Legislatures, this is the most recent act that I have been able to find. So if there is one that's in process or developed, it's not widely available to the public that I'm aware of.
And Heath, didn't we emulate the NCSL's version as well? I mean, aren't we somewhat in sync with national
group? I believe that the information and the Model Act that provided on the NCSL website was taken from the Uniform Law Commissioners. I don't believe that there was a second version. I believe that they were drawing off the Uniform Law Commissioners. I can't say that with 100% certainty, but that was my cursory review of the information provided by the two organizations.
Accurate too. Also, Representative Lynn is in attendance. Okay, Representative Guttenberg, you may be the only one left with questions.
Well, I'll have them at this time. Were you intending to move the bill out of committee?
I wanted to, but since we're not having a meeting Monday, but if you're real antsy to hold it, I can hold it. If not, I'd love for you to support at least moving it to judiciary, and we can answer any questions. It won't be scheduled for another probably 2 weeks in judiciary. So,
okay. I won't object.
Okay. Representative Lynn, we're just wrapping up on the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act. We have a CS before us for the bill, and we've had some questions answered. I was intending to move it on to Judiciary Committee, and then as you review the CS, if you have concerns, it probably won't be scheduled for several weeks, so there's more than enough time.
Yeah, of course, I've not heard the bill, Mr. Chair, but I will just do a no recommendation on it.
Okay. Well, then, Representative Roper?
Mr. Chairman, I would just advise Mr. Hilliard in your office that I believe the former Uniform Law Commissioner, Art Peterson of Juneau, was instrumental in having this bill before this committee before. It might be of interest to check some of the history.
Okay.
I know a little bit of grapevine history about that.
Yeah.
At the time it was introduced before, Alaska was also in the process of implementing a new trust statute.
Oh, yes.
And there was concern about how the two would mesh. And I think now that practicing trust law attorneys have lived with their new statute for a while, I would bet a lot of those concerns have gone away. If they want to come forward and speak out in favor of fraudulent conveyance, go ahead and let them.
No, Ms. Bettine, that's what we'll do. We'll have Heath contact Art and see if he has any thoughts on that.
Yeah, good idea. If he's still in Juneau, that'd be a good idea. And then you want to talk to Doug Blockmacher or somebody.
Yep.
And
we'll talk to Doug as well. Do you mind making the motion then?
Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to move the committee substitute for House Bill 295 Q version. No, excuse me, G version, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal zero fiscal note.
Okay, hearing no objection. Thank you, Michelle and Lynn. And the bill moves on to House Judiciary. We'll schedule that accordingly, and we have no other bills before us, so please remember there's no committee meeting Monday, and we will return Wednesday, and Labor and Commerce adjourns.
It's best.